You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Caitlin Chisick. Caitlin is a fantastic costume designer. She designed the show I'm in right now, Drunkelvania, with 3-Day Hangover. And it's been wonderful getting to know her and her work. She lights up a room and has brought so much thoughtfulness and humor to the process with that play. I'm excited to share this conversation. If you enjoy The Compass, if I could please, please ask for a quick favor. If you can rate or review the podcast in iTunes, just search for the show in the podcast app and leave a quick rating. It'll take 30 seconds and it would really help other artists to find us. So thank you so much for that. I hope you enjoy the 64th episode of The Compass. How do you try to avoid going to the dark side as an artist?
What is the dark side? The dark side is when you like lose sight of what you're doing and the value of storytelling. It's when the personal trials and tribulations outweigh the responsibility we have to do this. Which I'm sure some people won't agree with because they think we're fluff. But, you know, every once in a while, I think we as a community do some really poignant stuff. And losing sight of that is the dark side. Sometimes it's, I think, good to go there in a way. Like, to kind of, like, let the cap fly off and to, like, have the messy cry fest eyeliner moment on the train. And I've done it a number of times. But I avoid it mostly by putting myself in a situation where I can laugh at what's happening, where I can like get to a person or a place or a situation or even a work of art that like kind of makes me laugh at the absurdity of it. And I joke a lot that like the hardest part for me is the lugging. It's like when people or companies don't help like navigate things. Like when I waste time negotiating transportation, it's like, well, that's not art. It's not what you hired me to do, and I hate that part. But then you, like, have a beer, and you recount, like, being covered in eyeliner with, like, your hat falling in the mud and, like, your suitcases full of costumes ripping or, like, the taxi driver screaming at you, and you're like, yeah, that's kind of beautiful chaos, too. Right. And so you have to, like, turn around on that moment and love it a little bit and be like, yep, that's who I am. That's where I go.
How did you first get into costume design?
Well, I have always been a kid of the theater. My dad taught and acted and directed. My mom worked in the theater for a while, so I was raised in like a theater house. And you know, there were like very stern arguments about like, you know, the influence of Stanislavski on a more active Adler method and like garbage like that. And it was like, that was dining room table talk. So I speak actor pretty fluently, but, I was acting in college and it was great. I mean, I love it. I love the theater. I love my comrades in arms. But it was just too exhausting. The emotional toll of being an actor and like performing, not just performing, like, sure, it's like it's energy and you need a power bar, but also like if it's demanding a lot of your emotional spectrum or the character's emotional spectrum, I was like jet lagged and I couldn't keep it up. It actually takes a kind of stronger person for that. Mm-hmm. But I'd always been a home sewer and like a crafter and like a nerd who likes magazines and fabric swatches and stuff like that. I almost said a curse. Am I
lying? That's all right.
Oh, totally. I like shit like that.
Okay, great.
I was like confused. I didn't know what to do. And I got offered this like less than minimum wage job in the costume shop at undergrad, like helping with alterations. And so within the span of 9 months, I was applying to a master's program and got in and uprooted my life. And
right after undergrad.
Mm-hmm. So I was only in the shop a little over a year. And then turned that into a direction. And I've never turned back. It's been great. I love it. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. And you grew up in New York.
I did, yeah. So lots, I mean, I know there's some New York City kids who like, they were those kids going to see Rent. Like they were lined up outside. But it was, you know, they took me to see like garbage Shakespeare on St. Mark's Street and... back when the Cocteau was still around, we would go, like, I saw this, like, very strange version of Lysistrata that was all, like, bondage. You know what I mean? Like, strap on.
The underground
stuff. But, like, you went with your dad, too, and he was like, so, like, you know, what are the narrative implications of strap-ons? And you're like, oh, Dad. Yeah. But you had that theater talk.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And so when you went to grad school, that's where you met all the 3-Day Hangover folks that we're doing Drunk of Anya with.
It is, yeah. So David was there. He was in the acting program ahead of me, and Beth was there in the directing program. I remember, actually, David and I were joking the other night about the first time we ever met was in a fitting. And and, like, we have this sort of impression of that moment being like, oh, yeah, like... You're a person who's doing this, like kind of like meeting on that level. And then with Beth, we actually didn't really hang out much in grad school. And then after my second year, her third year, we both got offered a job at the same summer company and like on a whim decided to live together. But it was like the beginning of a beautiful everything. Like we moved into this like cute little house and... I had a birthday a couple of days later and I like woke up to like fresh coffee and homemade biscuits and like the perfect Southern hospitality of Beth Gardner. And I think we like speak a very similar visual language and like to tell the same kind of stories and like to drink. She taught me how to drink whiskey, which I didn't know how to do before that. So yeah, we have a good time.
All the important life lessons.
The important life lessons, theater lessons for sure.
So have you, since grad school, have you been... mostly freelancing?
Yeah.
Did you move back to New York right away?
I did. I came back immediately. I always knew I would. You know, the old adage is true. You can take the girl out of the city. You can't take the city out of the girl. Mm-hmm. My family is still here. So it was very much about like still wanting to be home and connected to them. And theater, I mean, this is the mecca of theater in this country, really. So it didn't make sense to kind of go anywhere else. Plus, the rent was free. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Do you have brothers and sisters? Or is it just
I'm an only.
Ah. Mm. And we already discussed that your dad was way into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Because I usually ask, like, what do your parents make of you choosing a life in the arts?
Oh.
Even though they were already kind of in it, have they accepted your choice as well?
Yeah, there was this, like sort of, like, this like half-hearted, like, could you try anything else? Like, is there any possibility of another field? But I think they kind of knew right away that they'd brainwashed me too early. They were really happy when I decided to become a designer. I think like the, having been an actor himself, the stress of that was like too much. And he was like, okay, well at least like designer feels a little bit more like structured and stable. Okay. All right. But yeah, they've never worried about pulling me back from that. They're pretty supportive, and I'm really lucky to have that.
That's really great.
Aw, Mom and Dad.
And so for me, coming from the actor side of it, I don't really know anything about like how you as a designer find your freelance work.
Huh.
Do you work with some sort of agent?
Oh.
Are you out there just, you know, one person you meet leads to the next job, leads to the next job kind of thing?
Pretty much. It's a lot of... you know, with something like 3-Day Hangover, they were getting started and they knew there was a dependable person in town. And so it was a little bit like it was a convenience for them. And then it, you know, and then in job on job on job. I still send a lot of cold emails. I try to keep informed. I'm not really very good at this, but I try to see other design and find out who did it and kind of where they're coming from. And I'm still in a place in my career where assisting is a way to get involved and network and connect. So trying to do that, but also reaching out to theaters. There are a couple of forums I belong to, one on Facebook, one is like a G group. And so people put postings out there about like, oh, we're looking for a shopper for the next day, or we need somebody to just run returns, or, and especially as television is like becoming a pretty big market in the city, getting like day play work on TV shows has been another field I've been trying to break into. And then then you go to the bar. Do you know what I mean? Like your theater friend has their theater friends who have their theater boyfriends, cousins, roommates, in-law, and you go and you have a drink and it's like, oh yeah, we should totally work on this bizarre thing. And after enough drinks, it all sounds like a good idea. So yeah.
You follow up the next day.
You're like, you were pretty drunk, but I think you like me. So please give me a job. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Some designers have agents. And it's like it's a question on the, I know a few people who do it, but then I have to give away more of my money. So we'll see.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's interesting if you're doing all these different roles, like where you can, you know, this person needs help with this or this person needs help with that. How do you deal with, like, I'm assuming the thing you want to do the most is, like, to be the designer who's really getting to see a concept through from the beginning to end. And when you are getting a chance to do that, what is your process like along the way?
The process is, it's funny. It's like, I just smile sort of thinking about it. And I know myself well enough to know that I'm a little bit different when I have the reins that way. I'm very much a social nerd. I do like the part of the job that's hanging out and looking at stuff and talking and like having an extra drink and like really debating a point in the script, and then turning all of that stuff into research and narrative and trying to relate it. You know, how does this image relate to that plot device, or how does the history of the time influence, you know, the bigger story we're telling or the arc somehow? And I get like absurdly excited over trying to answer the questions of the play with images, and then diving into those details. If it's a period or a look or a style, taking that apart, like, oh, the shoes were like this, and I can play with that detail, or like there would be, you know, fabric layered or beading or whatever that, and somehow all of those minute little things compose a richness and make a character. I don't know. I feel like this is like a little bit of verbal vomit, but it is so exciting that to a certain degree, it's like hard to quantify because it's just joy. Yeah. I'm joyful when I do it.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like the process doesn't necessarily give you the time?
Oh, it never gives you the time.
To do that the way you never would hope.
Yeah. And I think that's why like a lot of more,
and that some people don't understand that like, that's a huge part of your job, like that sort of preparation and thought.
Yeah. And it, you know, if I really don't have the time, if you're working under a lot of pressure and I don't sort of look at all the options from all the angles, I'm not as sort of fluent in the dressing room or in the like, we need a new solution in tech kind of moments. It's when I can kind of go back into the art history cave, that I learn more, not only about the clothes and the designs and the aesthetics and the details, but I understand their relationship to the characters a lot better. So when you take the time away to do that, to build that relationship, when I don't get to kind of get married to the research, I'm just not as committed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had many mentors in your career so far? Like, or do you feel like that hasn't played as big a role for you?
That's a good one. I don't, but that's not to say yes and no. There are some people who were sort of intended to play a very specific mentoring role and it never fit. And then there are some people who like sort of aren't theater people or aren't costume people, but have been guiding forces and have taught me about other things. I think to a certain degree, I'm of an age now where like, I will always be students, you know, will always be learning, mm-hmm. but I find that the thing most like mentorship is the support of my peers. It's like the person who, when you start to fall back in the race, is like, keep going. And they kind of like, they find something that kind of pops you back out in front again. And that's not mentorship in a traditional way, but it mentors you on your own focus and on your own drive. And they're really more valuable to me than a lot of sort of like, here's your teacher,
right?
People have been. And it's the one sort of really long-term mentor I've had in costumes is at this point just a friend. Like,
yeah,
she's
transitioned.
Yeah. And I text her absurdities in the middle of the night. And like I was there for the birth of her first kid. Like she's a teacher, but she's like just another weirdo. So yeah.
And we were just talking about before we started recording that you just came from teaching.
Mm.
When did you start doing that? Is that something that inspires you, or is it more of like a moneymaker?
Well, both? The money's great, at least compared to freelance costume design checks. No, teaching, that was a component of my graduate degree, and I always was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. I never like sort of felt too particular about it, but I'm actually really loving it right now.
Yeah.
And it's hokey, but it's like that moment where you see their brain like tilt to the left and like the piece click in and they're like, oh yeah, I can do this now. You're like, yeah, like I changed the composition of your brain. And some of them, I mean, it's a community college, so some of them are still like 18, 19, 20, and like their brains haven't finished fusing, you know, like the two lobes haven't become right. One brain. And so the idea that like some little piece of information I've imparted has like been part of the fusion is a really cool idea. But they're New Yorkers too. And so like we get like, they're loud and they come with coffee and they like challenge me all the time. Like I'm teaching an intro to theater course at the moment. And I'm like, the department is specific about kind of the book, like the book has things and they need to know the things in the book. Mm-hmm. And like some of it's like reasons we go to the theater, A, B, and C. And like, and the kids will be like, okay, cool. But like, really though, like, why should I give any of these assholes my money? And I'm like, okay, great. And then there's like a half an hour argument about it. And some of them are like, I'm a criminal justice major and you can have none of my money. And other people are like, oh, I'm a social worker and this could be an outlet. And for me and for patients and the right amount of money is an investment and I can't go to Broadway, but I can go to wherever. Like, and so that argument, that conversation, this back and forth. And one of them stood up to me the other day and was like, there's another, I forget exactly what we were talking about, but I was like, the book says there are three reasons. And he like advocated really hard for a fourth and we took a vote and everybody was like with this kid. And I was like, great, there are four reasons now. Unfortunately for them, they now have four things to remember for their midterm instead of three, but that's what you get for making a good argument. So,
oh, that's awesome that you're teaching kind of the breadth of everything. You're not just teaching sewing or design right now. That's
yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, I like that they have perspectives and they're not, you know, I think the good thing about your theater friends and family is that we've all taken the pill. Like we drank the Kool-Aid already.
Yes.
So like we know it's great and it's life and it's beautiful and like, you know, we're going to cry after the show or whatever, but these kids haven't had the Kool-Aid and they challenge that in me a lot.
But we need those people.
We do.
So often I feel like we're just preaching to the choir.
Yes. Yes.
Shows or whatever. And so it's good to be having people in completely different fields who mm-hmm. are like, oh, I would consider going to a play now when maybe I wouldn't have last week.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't let me take myself too seriously. And I don't take myself particularly seriously, but they definitely keep it in check.
Is there anything you've learned over the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about?
They're all like little things. They're like,
that's okay.
You know, have a good rider.
Yeah. Do you work all that stuff out yourself?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
I am proud to say I just joined the design union, so now other Woo! People can work that out for me, too.
Awesome. But up until then, like, you just do a lot of research on, like, what your contract should have in it? And...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sort of standard things out there, and designers tend to share a lot because we are trying to protect one another, and we've all been burned. You also learn from experience too. You're like, oh, I didn't ask for help on this and now I'm doing it myself and I never want to do this again. So next time in the contract.
Yeah.
What was the question?
Something you've learned that you're really proud of.
To slow down. The the slightly younger version of me was like, had to go to every meeting, had to go to every after party, had to, you know, had to like pound, like schedule appointments on like next to on top of one another. And I, not only I got worn out and it made me not as good. I wasn't as good. So I had this like weird turnaround the other day. I was working at a totally unrelated job on Saturday, and the theater I was designing for in Philadelphia, they were having trouble sort of getting the right tools in the room, mainly a sewing machine. And so it occurred to me that the only way that I could make this happen on a timeline where there would be enough room for the director and I to still like look together and like discuss the stage picture was to just sort of like take the matter into my own hands. And so like, even though I had not planned on going to Philadelphia when I left, it was like, okay, well, you have to leave this job. You have to go home. You have to pack. You have to go to this other place. You're going to stay there. You're going to get a car. You're going to get up. You're going to drive. You're going to do. And like, it was a big thing. And a younger self would have sort of felt out of control and like wanted to rush, like get home quick, pack quick. Well, it's like, well, just pack.
Yeah.
Just have the things you need. And if you lose 10 minutes or 15 minutes that adds up to a half an hour. But if you race out the door without the one tool you're doing all this for, then you've actually ruined days.
Right.
So yeah, the lesson is slow down. I don't like running for the train anymore. Like I'd rather be at the meeting not sweating.
Yeah.
And like coming through a moment, maybe later than is perfect, then show up and not be able to catch my breath or articulate myself or be wondering like, oh my God, when I jumped that turnstile, did I drop my wallet and did all the cards stay in it? Or is my American Express sitting in a train station somewhere?
Right.
So yeah, slow down. Everybody slow down.
That's a good one.
Especially in New York. It's hard.
Yeah, it is. Everyone's telling you to speed up.
Yeah. Well, speed up on the sidewalk. Slow walkers, I cannot tolerate.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. Do you have any other hobbies or artistic outlets outside of the design realm?
Cooking.
Ooh.
I like to cook.
Hello, cars. Sorry.
It's New York, baby. Yeah, it's so funny. In the last few years, I've had any number of people who are who belong to the culinary world come in. And I had toyed with the idea briefly that if I hadn't gotten into grad school, I was going to go to culinary school. And almost everyone I've shared that with is like, no. That's, you are not going to do that. I was like, oh, okay.
You still could.
Sure. I mean, like I should pick a more competitive,
right,
difficult right. career than the one I currently have. But I love food. I'm not a very good baker. But I like a kitchen, and I like a hot meal, and I like the way it gets people together, which I think it's sort of like a different version of the theater. But
yeah.
I made chili last night. It's pretty good.
That's great. Can we talk a little bit about Junkovania?
Yes! 3-day hangover for life. It's my favorite hashtag.
Project.
Yeah.
Is actually playing, and I've managed to have a lot of the artistic team and the cast on. Between when we did it 2 years ago and when we did it now, when you joined the team. So what was the process like for you in designing this crazy modern Chekhov drinking game play?
David and Laurie, and Beth, I apologize for this, but it was very last minute. I kind of got the call.
Well, the opportunity to do the show at all came up very last minute for all of us.
Yes. Yeah. It was great, too, because I've worked for... Now it's like I did Drunk Shakespeare with David, and I did Tartuffe with Beth, and now I was supposed to do Dracula with Laurie, but she had to have a baby. And now doing Drunkovania with Laurie. So it's like now I've kind of gotten the full spectrum.
The trifecta.
The trifecta.
Yes.
The process was fun. I mean, I think because Laurie and I didn't go to school together, we are like... And it's fun. It's like finding that visual language and being like, I said it. Did you mean?
Right.
Oh,
what's
oh,
your
okay,
communication
we,
style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like figuring that out has been a lot of fun in a way that like, I don't even think Beth Gardner and I think about it anymore because it's happened so many times. We're like, you know, we squeak at each other. Like, who's that Muppet character who just
beep, 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 beep.
Yeah.
Oh God. What's his name with the long skinny?
Yeah.
Beaker?
Beaker?
No. Is that true? I'm not sure.
I should know. I don't know. I apologize. But yeah, I think she and I kind of beep at each other and it's like, great. And I come back with a design. This process was great because I think Laurie and I both had aesthetic ideas about Russia. And we knew that the clothes needed to kind of live in this contemporary place. I think not only because of the kind of show we're doing, but because of the technicalities of the where, when, why, and how we're doing it too. So it's like, how is it here and how is it there? And she had these pieces from being in Russia and from working with the script and that relationship. And mine were like a little bit more like cinematic and pop culture-y. Like I brought in images of Dr. Zhivago and like, you know, sort of like B-team Russian oligarch wives and stuff and like the things they do. And I was like, isn't this horrible that they do this? They wear these things. And how do we make that part of this? Like, how do we use this insane thing to our advantage? And so it was like this back and forth, this building of like, oh, you've got this weird, ugly hat and I've got this piece of narrative and could that hat and this they can. Great. And we have a device for the top of the show, you know? So, yeah, I sort of wish we had like more, it's like, I wish there was more show. And I actually at opening the other night, they come out with that suitcase and I was like, oh, I want to redesign coats. I want more coats. There needs to be more stuff in Russia.
Right.
If you're listening, David, I'd like to design more coats.
Well, it's also hard because we're working in a non-traditional space where the stuff is kind of being stored in a back corner at this restaurant when we're not there. And it's only 3 shows a week, so it's hard to have all the things.
Yeah, and it puts pressure on the clothes, too, to kind of be the coat without the coat being there. oh, my God, I'm just thinking.
Huge metaphor.
Yeah. This is not the coat, but if it were the coat, it would speak volumes. So finding those details. I only took a couple of notes the other night, so I must be pretty happy.
I know Laurie had talked about, like, if we keep extending, like, maybe changing the costumes with the seasons.
Yes.
You think that might still happen?
If
we magically keep running forever?
If we magically keep running forever, I think that could happen. Yeah. I can't speak for producers. I've learned not to do this. But yeah, I think there is opportunity for, like, and I hope you feel this way, like, everybody's got, like, a couple of little things, do you know what I mean? These, like, little details that ground us, they either ground us in Russia, or they influence a bit of character, or they reflect back into this 19th century sensibility, or they evoke the farm, or the homestead, or whatever. I think those things have lives in other seasons and other versions and in other iterations. And it could be really fun to find them. You know, like, I think about Sonia's sweater and it's like, well,
the sad girl sweater.
Right. And like, what is the sad girl summer? Look, and like that's one question where I'm like, oh god, no. But at the same time, I'm like, or is she so sad she like wears a sweater in August? You know,
I'm so attached to that sweater.
I love that thing
now.
I love that.
I could do without it.
It's so drapey.
Please, everyone, come see Drunkalvania so you can see what we're talking about with the sad girl
sweater. It's such a sad girl sweater. It speaks volumes about Sonia's emotional state. I actually really, I don't know if I'm giving too much away, but when you sort of gesture with your hands in your pockets and the whole sweater sort of beats around you.
See, I'm not aware of this.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm glad.
It's so good. It kills me a little bit every time.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun show. I hope we get to keep doing it for a long time.
I've said this after too many glasses of champagne to them as well, but I am so delighted that some of these classic pieces of theater that I grew up with, like, kind of having like nerd romances with, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That they're like, they're here and they're contemporary and it's not a statement. It's not like we're doing Chekhov because we have a feeling about Chekhov that'll inform the current whatever garbage. I hate that shit. But like, we're just, it's like, yeah, this story is really good. So let's like pump it up and do it.
Yeah.
And I love that about 3 Day Hangover. I love that we all work in the room and we're like, yeah, let's fucking do this. Mm-hmm.
Well, part of it's just because I've lived with it for so long now, but I don't even think about it as being a question that like, oh yeah, this is relevant right now. This is contemporary. This is somewhere in between. It doesn't feel dated to me. It doesn't feel like we're trying too hard to make it of today.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm brainwashed.
But it lives somehow outside my, like, what... When I think about adaptation in the kind of like theater 101 kind of sense, it's not that. It's not that kind of adaptation. It's not like, you know, what's a good example? I don't know. But when we kind of adjust the language in like a restoration play, like that kind of, it's not that. It's its own thing.
Part of that goes to Chekhov, just like writing stories that are so human and...
Yeah.
You know, some of the stories are dependent on historic things or historic events, but it's just about these little human moments that are the same. Mm-hmm. We're all still awkward now. We're all still trying and failing at things now.
Yes.
You know?
And I think it, I mean, and he, his humor was sort of understated that way, but this makes it like unquestionably funny. You're like, oh my God, we are that ridiculous. Yes. You have to laugh.
Do you work out of town a lot? You were mentioning Philly.
I do a little. I think I average like two or three jobs out of New York a year. I was in California last summer. I'll be back in California this summer. I worked in Ohio last year. I try to bounce around a little.
Do you like working out of town?
I do. I like traveling. I like the chaos of it all. I'm getting a little bit tired. Maybe that means I'm getting older. But yeah, just that we don't have a national theater, but we do have a national theater community. And there are enough of us moving around, actors, designers, and I mean this in a good way, but like rumors too, like, oh, like I did this job with this place and they put me in this like really cute Victorian B&B or this hotel. Like there is this shared conversation happening nationally. And I think sometimes it's about theater, but sometimes it's about goofy shit too. And I really like that I get to participate in it and that I get to pop into towns and see friends or meet new people or network with new theaters. And I like to talk. I guess that's probably obvious at this point. But I like, you know, when you go someplace and you meet new people, it's like, great, like you're a person who I can talk to until I get a job from you. Hi, it's nice to meet you. So it's fun. It's fun.
That's good that you like that.
That's, I do.
Very handy.
Yeah.
This is a question that I just decided to add to the podcast this week because a friend suggested it to me.
Okay.
So if you don't want to answer it, that's fine.
I'm bracing myself.
But he suggested that I start asking how people have been dealing with the new political climate as an artist or just as a human.
Yeah.
If you are interested in answering it.
Sure. I guess I would just want to offer that there's a lot of soapboxing at the moment, even from people I agree with, and I don't want anything I say to sound like it's a decision or a truth. I am in process with what's happening just as much as anyone. There's a lot I haven't figured out. And as a citizen, I am particularly worried about what's happening a la our civil liberties. And that'll affect me as a person, as a woman, and as a daughter, or as a, all of those other identities that have nothing to do with the arts. The thing I think I'm like really quite scared of, I'm not even really comfortable with that word because I think that's the word that's gotten thrown at the left. Like, what are you afraid? Like, you're being a drama queen. And like, I am a drama queen. So like, I'm trying to be really reserved about what I am fearful of. And I try to check that against every piece of evidence around me because if it's not legitimate, I don't want to antagonize anyone else's fear. But we are demonstrating right now a degree of selfishness and nastiness, and not in the fun Hillary Clinton way, and pettiness, and that is a cultural thing. That is about our inner workings as a country. And I think the arts community to a certain degree has always sort of enjoyed that, like, we're not a class the way, like, we're different. you know, we, like, our roots come from something semi-religious based. We're like, we're these weird things. And maybe sometimes being the underdog really serves us. But when we start to address the arts with nastiness, when we start to, like, sort of write it off as irrelevant, even though we've been practicing it and pained for it for centuries, that produces fear. I know that those are, I don't want to speak to particulars because I don't want to start a fight with anybody in my life. But if you can't relate the issues we're having with speech to how that could trickle down to what's performed on a stage, then you're not paying attention. And that is terrifying. That terrifies me. I did call the NEA this week and I was like, are you guys good? What's going on? What do I need to do? And they were like, they're bureaucrats too, but they were like, well, like the NEA is feeling like we will know more come the budget conversation for 2018. So it was like very much this like, we're good.
Measured response.
Yes, it was very much.
Please don't show up at our doorstep.
Please don't come. Please don't come here. And I was like, cool, I won't show up, but I will be watching everything that happens like a hawk.
Good for you for checking in.
Yes, I checked with the NEA. I'm very nervous and I, it's funny when we were sort of all having our like donation moments in the last couple of weeks, it was like I did Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, but I did PBS and NPR first. And I, in a weird way, I was like, oh, that's like a little it's like a little bit of a way to know yourself. Like, who did you give your money away to first?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I gave it to the arts. I gave it to broadcasting and television. I really want to say Big Bird.
Well, I mean, there are other things in there too that have a lot to do with free speech.
So yeah,
those are important too.
Yes, I like the idea though that Big Bird could be the visual image though. Like this, you want to cut the bird? It's about the bird. Don't take the bird away. We existed so long on the idea of public, like public schools, public radio, public television, public enterprises, public institutions. And I mean, I work for one, so I know how difficult they can be, but I don't know why we jumped to this idea that they're not good.
Well, that's the scary part, is that the two ideas are so polarized of
right. That
public and government can be good, and that any, you know, anything but extremely limited government is bad.
Right. We're too big to not take care of things. Like, on a tiny island with a small population, I sort of get like, all right, cool. Like, libertarians want to take care of themselves and do whatever. Cool. Like, great. Like,
the community will support its own.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Yeah. And I like the idea of island living. Like, if we could do that with palm trees, I could probably get behind it. But like, what are there, 8 million people in New York? And like, what? Some of them just don't eat? That's the plan? That's not a plan.
Thank you for answering that. I know it's a heavy question. It could take us down so many rabbit holes. Thank you. What have you learned over the years about like dealing diplomatically with actors in the fitting room? And because I know sometimes we can be selfish or like tiptoe onto your territory in that way.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because and it's true to varying degrees with the other designers, but the work the costume designer does is really dependent upon an actor's willingness to put it on. And, you know, I think in the black and white rulebook version, there's this sense of like, well, you're an actor, just put it on. That's part of the job. Don't violate the contract. And that it's not that it's untrue, but it doesn't ultimately produce a good costume either. Like, if someone is genuinely unhappy in the garment, it will show in weird ways. Like, it could be like very passive aggressive. Like I've had costumes come back to me with like problems or tears. Ooh. And I'm like, okay, great. But I've also seen it like affect the energy of an actor or affect the movement of the actor. And I don't want that. That doesn't serve the story. And therefore it's not,
I find like working with a really good costume designer gives me ideas about the character that I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
But it has to be like a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume like if the actor had a completely different idea than you about the costume, it would like, everybody would be butting heads.
Yeah. And I think that unless the actor is coming to me from a place that is so wholly grounded in vanity, any actor who comes to me with like, there's stuff happening here and we got to talk about it, I would be like, great, let's do it. Like, and I would rather spend a half an hour in the fitting room figuring that out than trying anything on. And that's a little bit of a dream because you don't always have that time to make up when you're trying on costumes in a dining room on 53rd Street. Yeah. Or
52nd.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, especially with contemporary shows, I'm like, would they wear this? And that question has to be asked pretty carefully because like a cuckoo brain's actor, and they exist, bless all of your hearts, actors, but some of you are cuckoo, they will like, that will sort of signal to them that it's up to them, and it's not. I have to be responsible for the whole picture, and your one idea about that one shirt can't trump the stage picture. But the idea of like, you know, when people are like, oh yeah, like, I know we need a cool graphic, but like, I'm sure she listens to No Doubt or whatever. Like, and you're like, oh, that would be so great. Like, let's get a band t-shirt. Let's do, you know, and that's so informative about character. It's like, visually, it's fun and interesting. There's like nostalgia to it. So like, I love those conversations where they go back and forth. With period shows, and especially when you're having stuff constructed, you know, that's when you have this conversation that's a little bit more like, oh, I picked this kind of pattern or this lace or this detail, da 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 da, because of this thing I read in the script. And that's, I think, when you have that back and forth for an actor. And when I get to sort of use my visual linguistics training to impart something I saw on the script. Whereas right. with the t-shirt, it's like, well, I speak t-shirts. I'll tell you which t-shirt is right. And it's like, no, I mean, you do, but you don't. I mean, like, there is different. We had different.
In conversation with all the other t-shirts right, on stage.
Right, and the jeans. And the infinity scarves or whatever. Right. So, yeah, but that's a really fun part for me. And, like, I love actors who listen and engage and talk. Right. And, you know, one of the things we try to teach young actors is like, you know, I don't like this or I don't want to wear this isn't helpful.
Right.
But like, why am I wearing it? Have you thought about this? And have you thought about the costume in relation to this moment or scene or idea? That's a conversation point and you learn a lot from that. And that's great.
Yeah.
And I think being a costume designer lets me like sort of reminisce, like it's like the actor days. Like I get to do a little bit of actor work when I'm alone with the script and like talk about in my brain, like have my little brain conversation.
Well, you can think about it from each character's point of view
yes.
to a certain extent. And yeah, totally.
Yes. But yeah, I joke, and this is like something I say at the bar with other designers. I'm like, well, if they want to give me notes on costumes, I'm going to give them notes online, like on lines. Like, if you aren't off book, why do you get to tell me anything about the costumes, frankly? Which would never fly in a rehearsal room, but
it's
my own little fantasy. No.
But the designers are allowed to joke about that together.
Yes. I just outed designers. I apologize.
Is it tricky to kind of deal with body image and stuff like that when you're in the fitting room with actors too, because it's personal, it's not just the wallpaper behind the actor, it's
right
things that are in conversation with the size of one's body.
Yes,
we all have our own issues with that, etc.
Yeah, and I one of the things I encountered a little while ago was an injury, and I hadn't thought, and it's like addressing sort of like there's a range of sort of body issues that I think we all kind of deal with. And I think I'm pretty good at addressing those and coaching through them. But someone was like, no, my foot literally can't do that thing. And I was like, and it wasn't visual. So it wasn't until I was like, put this on your body that they were like, no,
that's not an option.
Not an option. I was like, oh, okay, great. I need a new way to solve that. But yeah, I mean, my colleague from Irvine, actually, she jokes that it's costume designers, prostitutes, and doctors who say, come in, it's nice to meet you, please take off all your clothes. But yeah, we do. We're like, we're there sort of firsthand with people's bodies. And I've just seen enough of them in their underwear. And in the case of a lot of actors, they're like falling apart, old as hell underwear, that I just really think everyone is beautiful. So when I'm in the room, if someone's not sure, I'm sort of like newly in love every fitting. I'm like, you're beautiful. You were an instrument. You were capable of a story. What power? And a little bit, I guess to a little bit, of a degree that's a line, but I believe it too. So I hope everybody who comes in the fitting room with me like knows that that body there, whether or not they like one part or another, it's powerful. That's very beautiful to me. Oh. That machine kills fascism.
Okay. So if you are having like a day where you're in the dark side and you're feeling uninspired or beaten down, are there things that you reach for again and again, like a book or music or places you go or something like that?
Yeah. Monet's Japanese Bridge to the Met. And I can look at that thing for hours and I can just weep at it. Dylan Thomas's In My Craft or Sell an Art, which I think, I don't know a more perfect explanation for why we do this crazy art thing than that poem. I don't know. I wanted to call it a piece of art, but it's a poem. It's both. Yeah, and like a really great glass of wine. it's a lot easier to laugh afterward.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, to the credit of 3 Day Hangover, sometimes walking up into that room, and I think it's something about going through that weird fur carpet.
The tunnel?
Curtain. Yeah, it's the tunnel. it'll revive me a little bit.
Yeah.
And running. I a good run.
I was never a runner until like the last 2 years, and I've started to enjoy it, like, to the limited extent that I can. And today it was 60 degrees out in February, and I went for a run to the park.
Global warming isn't real, by the way. It's
and
not
we're getting
true.
A blizzard tonight.
Yeah,
so
it's fine.
But I took that one weird February day, and I was like, oh, this feels good.
Yeah.
It feels really good. I wish I had discovered it sooner. All right, and so the last question is, have you seen anything lately that you want to recommend? Of any art form, but especially theater.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Or have you been too busy to see anything?
I've spent a lot of time recently on the New Jersey Turnpike, so I might not have a great suggestion on this. I don't know her, but I think her name is Caitlin O'Connell. She's also a costume designer. She just did the recent designs for the Theater for a New Audience is Shakespeare. I'm a little too proud to easily, like, it's like, of course I want to support my fellow designers, but I tend to be a little stiff around other designers because I'm like, well, I can do stuff too. her designs came up today on the internet and it stopped me dead in my tracks. The artwork was, it gave me pause. So
you saw the renderings?
I saw the renderings. I haven't even seen the show. I don't even think the show is up. I think it's whatever they're doing next. But the renderings like took the wind out of me. And then I got my wind back. And I was like, oh shit, damn it. and then I took a lot of screenshots and I was like, how do I learn from this? What do I take into the back part of my brain to make me a better artist? So if I don't know.
So we'll all have to figure out that show.
Yeah. And hopefully I pass her someday and I can be like, that's really good. I hate you. I mean, that's really good.
No.
No, I don't. No. I don't mean that.
Teach me things.
Show me how.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.